All right, good afternoon, everyone. On this historical Thursday, what makes it historical, David?
We probably have the biggest political upset in election history, at least since probably 1948 or so, and with Trump pulling out a victory that no polls could predict.
Let's just go around the table, because I did not think that they were going to win, to the tune at which I promised my entire Bible class lunch if Trump won. That's how much I did not. I have 21 Bible students that are all going to go spend $10 or more at lunch. So
Frank was pretty excited.
Yeah, this is going to hurt my pocket from opening my big mouth. But John, that's how much I did not think that Trump was going to win. I mean, I concluded that Hillary was going to win by at least 3 or 4 percentage points. And I did not think, David, that North Carolina was going to go for Hillary in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
You mean for Trump?
Yeah, I didn't think that at all. I thought for sure that we were going to Hillary.
It was
camp.
Strange because our governor is at least dead even, if not just a little bit down, depending on all this recount stuff that's going on. So what that tells you is that there were people that did not vote for the Republican gubernatorial candidate but voted for Trump. So it's a really interesting election, the way that all laid out.
Yeah, I was watching the news the other day, or this morning, actually, and they were talking about the secret Trump voters, the people that refused to acknowledge they were voting for Trump, but ended up voting for Trump. Just because they didn't, which I'd say probably was this room.
It's like all the people that eat at McDonald's but don't want to tell everybody that they eat at McDonald's.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah,
they just sneak in there through the drive-thru so nobody sees them there.
Yeah, that's probably happened
a lot.
Well, my brother, who lives up in Boston, Massachusetts, who's just been for Trump almost from the very beginning, attending the rallies, the whole works, told me that he took the Trump stickers off his vehicle because he knew that he was not getting bids. He was given legitimate bids for jobs up in Boston, Massachusetts. I knew that he was getting denied jobs that he normally would have just been secured those bids.
Mm-hmm. So yeah, I can imagine that up there.
Right, that kind of speaks to what you're talking about. The other part that's historical, David, is the power that he is. I mean, the House, the Senate, he's got a Supreme Court justice that he's going to put in place right away, at least one.
Yeah.
The other ones are going to hold out and just, barely, stay on oxygen tanks until...
Yeah, Ginsburg and Kennedy and the rest of them will... They will not step down off that court. You know that.
Right.
Yeah. But he says he's going to start reviewing that list of 20 that he got, through the Heritage Foundation, and said that's day one. A lot of things that he says he's going to do day one. They posted an article today I was looking at, and that's another option for a podcast sometime. But if he does all the things he's saying he's going to do on day one, it'll be unprecedented.
Yeah, day one is going to be an amazing – that's going to be a long day in the life of the White House.
Yeah.
Day one is going to be incredible. So if you had to sum up to the listener, David, why did he win?
I think this was the anti-election. I think, I don't think it's so clear-cut as Republicans and Democrats anymore, because I think both of those parties have lost their way. I think they're way far afield from where they really should be and where their constituency is. And I think there were probably about 10% that were really passionate about Hillary, and 10% that were really passionate about Trump. And I think everybody in the middle said, I hate him a little less than I hate her, and I can't vote for her, or I can't vote for him for whatever reasons. And so they cast the anti-vote. I think there were a lot of Democrats that were frustrated, Bernie Sanders supporters, that know that the Democrats hosed Bernie, that their own party pushed Hillary above the guy that had a legitimate chance to win, and they loved him, and they were loyal, and they couldn't bring themselves to vote for him. And I think there were a lot of Republicans that were dead set on other nominees, anybody but Trump, and they couldn't vote for him. And so I think that's what created it. I think there's a populist thing. I think that's the drive against the establishment, against the corruption that was so evident. And say what you will about Trump as far as his coarseness and his, unlikability. But he was not entrenched in that establishment, and I think that's probably what pushed him over the top.
I saw a poll on CBS that was either 63 or 65% of those that responded to the poll are unhappy with the way government's working.
Yeah, well, and
especially specifically Washington.
Yeah, over half the country's dissatisfied with Obamacare. Over half the country's dissatisfied with the way we spend. I mean, that we're not going in the right direction. That we're not going on the right track. The majority is all on that side of the not necessarily that side of the aisle, but that side of the way of thinking. And so, you know,
it would be interesting to see the number of people that voted against Hillary simply because their Obamacare premiums were jacked up again this year.
Just name it. I mean, the stuff that affected them on a daily basis. And Hillary lost from Obama in 2008, she lost 10 million votes.
Yeah.
So what does that tell you? Well, that tells you that I would think, A, the black vote did not turn out for Hillary, and others as well. They did not turn out like they did in 2008. So she did not make that connection that she thought she did. You know, the far left loves her, but other than that, you know, they couldn't grab onto the fact of a corrupt politician like Hillary.
So am I wrong to say, David, you said already that the black vote obviously did not come out. Did the white vote come out?
You know, in a sense, yeah. I mean, I think she did not do well with white women, which Obama had done well with. So, you know, people like to paint this in racist kind of things. You know, that's been the big thing, is all the white people rejected Obama. Well, in rural Pennsylvania, they voted for Obama the last two elections. And for some reason in this election, they went to Trump. That's not white supremacy. That's not racism. They were supporting a totally different candidate, and they got sick of something so far enough to swing them to a Trump vote. Something happened. You know, it wasn't a racist thing. It was a policy-driven. And what was the whole thing is that Hillary was going to carry on that Obama legacy. Obama basically said, this election will be a referendum on my legacy. Well, I think America just rejected your legacy,
mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. John, you've been silent.
Well, I think that what we learned is groups, idea groups alone aren't going to carry the day. What I mean by that is just putting forth and constantly talking about women's issues is not going to carry the day. You know, we talked about the black vote not turning out for Hillary. I think in part that was because they saw Hillary as all she wanted to talk about was this. And even when they went on the attack for Donald Trump, they were attacking the sexist idea. And so this feminist viewpoint was really picked up on, I think, by many of the black voters. And it didn't resonate with them, because she is a weird combination of both coddling and demeaning in a way that is kind of passive aggressive. You know, it's like the grandmother who wants to tell everybody how everything should be, but you just decide, dear, you know, kind of thing. And at the end,
she don't mean that when she says you just decide, dear. She don't mean that at all, does she?
And I think what you're going to find, this is both human nature and sin nature at its core. What we really discovered was that people really do want somebody who's going to make a strong decision, even if it's one they don't like, because they know in the end it's better for them. And so this is like the child who really does want structure. They don't want the parents that are just, you know, do whatever you want. Somehow, subconsciously, we understand that Donald Trump, for all his flaws and his rough speech, you know, he was a man of action, and the party of action, and let's take care of these problems, we're going to rip the Band-Aid, we're going to do these things. And it was amazing to me even how the Hispanics responded to him. Because he said and did many things that you would think wouldn't put them in, but they voted for him too in a larger measure than in the past. And so I think that it goes all the way back to human nature. And what we find is people zoned in pretty quickly. Really, Hillary is a feminazi, and that is her bent. That's like almost her universe. And what we're going to see when we read our article today is these people have their agenda as their universe, and they don't think or act outside of their universe at all. And they believe that everybody in the United States is in this same world that they're in, mm-hmm. whether it's transgender or you know, women's rights or whatever. And they they fail to see the bigger picture, which is there are millions of Americans who live out in the farm country. There are millions of Americans who live in the South or in the North or whatever it is, and they don't hold the same opinion I do.
Yeah.
And if they don't hold the same opinion I do, what I'm going to say is I'm going to say that you're a bigot, that you're a racist, that instead of saying you and I disagree on a fundamental ideological plane, let's discuss that. It's just this name-calling thing. And what I think America really saw through that.
Yeah, at least a portion of America.
Yeah.
Enough Americans.
Yeah. I think they saw, because what did her campaign become? Well, she couldn't run on her record. Because there were so many red flags on the record with the national security and all that. And everybody knows that she's committed crimes and that she's unqualified to handle classified information. So you can't run on a foreign policy issue. You can't run on an economy issue because the economy's not doing well, right? Too many people on food stamps, too many people here, and all that. So what's she run on? Well, I'm a free college education because that was Bernie's idea. Mm-hmm. Okay, so she steals that. And then the rest of the campaign is, look at him. He's mm-hmm. awful. I'm the first woman president. You have to elect me. I'm the first woman. Right. You know, I've been here. I've earned that. We've had our first black president. That was a great advancement in civil rights. Now we need our first woman president. I think she just rested on the hope of that.
And I don't think
it wasn't enough.
No, it wasn't enough. Because really the only ones who care about that are the really hardcore feminists.
The ultra elites, yeah.
Yeah. And that was, you know, something I'm sure they're going to learn from. Hopefully, you know, if they want to be empowered.
Yeah. Oh, and isn't it funny how it spun this week, and now everybody's so gracious. And mm-hmm. we and all the Democrats are saying, well, we want to work for unity now. Well, if this election would have turned out the other way, do you think they would have gone, come on, Republicans, we want some unity over here, and we're going to get together and figure out our own agenda. You know, they accuse the Republicans of being, you know, disunified, and they don't want to be a part of what we're doing. Well, you don't want them a part of what you're doing either. You're just... You're trying to trap people into, you know, falling into your little plan. It's just, it's pretty hypocritical.
It's interesting that you make particular reference to, I think you said farmers. So we left, when did we leave? We left Monday morning from Fayetteville on the eastern side of North Carolina, and we traveled out to Asheville, and we went by way of Charlotte because there are shopping events there, locations, and we cannot miss anything like that. I started noticing as we're traveling down these rural roads, because, you know, we didn't go way of 74. We went to Southern Pines so we could stop at the hospital and see Steve's mom, which is where Dr. Wilson is right now. And then we just basically took a rural route all the way out there to Charlotte and then another rural route. Everywhere, I mean literally everywhere, Trump, Pence, Trump, Pence, Trump, Pence, Trump. And so I began looking intentionally for Hillary. Because, you know, I thought, we're in Cumberland County. All right, Cumberland County went 60-some percent for Hillary. Yeah, it was, I mean, she got smoked here. Mm-hmm. But as we traveled west, it became very apparent to me that North Carolina is a very divided state.
Well, we were looking at it the other day. Yahoo had North Carolina up by county. And the only locations that voted for Hillary by county were
Charlotte, Nashville, Asheville, Triad.
Yeah, the triangle up Raleigh-Durham, Chapel Hill, and Cumberland County.
So you had a college in your town and went for Hillary. I mean, that was usually...
Yeah, Wilson, Wilson County.
And then the other 100 counties was just
and that pretty much played out across the whole landscape of America, because when they show the counties by counties, you know, it's predominantly red, and I know that some is spread out geographically, but the thing is, you know, all the people in the ideology that's liberal is near those city centers, Atlanta, New York, mm-hmm. Chicago.
Michigan, you know. Michigan's the most shocking map if you ever look at it, because Michigan was, you know, neck and neck, and the entire state's red except for Detroit. Right. Maybe one over here by Lansing.
Lansing's got a county, David, and there's one by Grand Rapids. Yeah. But other than that, it's a red state.
Yeah.
It was also interesting to note in the Upper Peninsula, David, Marquette, that one big city in the Upper Peninsula, again, where there's a university, mm-hmm. the Upper Peninsula, the single major university in the Upper Peninsula, it also went blue. Hmm. And really what it comes down to is, Al Mohler said it comes down to the coasts. So look at the eastern, western coast. It comes down to the cities. And it comes down to the colleges.
Yeah.
And there is this pervasive elitism that is that was really smacked in the face with this election.
Yeah, because what was the narrative was, you know, that Hillary liked to push was, well, you know, all these Trump supporters are uneducated country bumpkins. Mm-hmm. And clearly, he's got a few more than that.
Right. Yeah. But they get to vote. Those uneducated country bumpkins, they came out and voted.
They did.
Yeah.
So what's our article, David? Tell you found the article.
Yeah,
it's a solemnly Christian article, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The Daily Beast. Yeah. There was another one on here about how Trump is going to destroy the Supreme Court on the Daily Beast, but it's about the protests that have erupted. The not my hashtag. You know, you got to have a hashtag nowadays. So the hashtag is not my president. And meanwhile, if anybody would ever have said that about Barack Obama, that would never fly. But okay. Not my president. So there's all these millennials all around the country threatening violence, you know, protesting, rioting, blaming Hillary, not understanding the Electoral College. I saw a guy on a protester get interviewed yesterday, and he said, and the reporter said, "What do you want?" And he said, "I want Hillary to sue the United States of America because it's not fair that she got more votes and she's not president."
Wow.
It's just like when, and the reporter was an African American guy. It's just like when your vote was counted as 1/3 back in the day.
Wow.
You know, I said, "Well, somebody's never taken a civics class in their life because they don't understand the Electoral College." You know, I saw a tweet today that said, who's this Electoral College? I've never heard of them. I don't think they're in the SEC. You know, nobody has any idea what the Electoral College is. So, yeah.
Yeah, the ignorance is just...
That's fueling all of this.
Right. It's so pervasive. All right, let's get started there.
All right, so from New York City, early Wednesday evening in Manhattan's Union Square, the chants of hundreds of anti-Trump protesters ricocheted through the park's northern plaza. Lock him up. Lock him up. Lock him up.
You got to go lock him up. Lock him
and what would they be locking him up for? I'm curious on what crime he's committed.
Deleting classified emails. 24 hours earlier, many in the crowd associated those words with Trump's hate-filled rallies, where the Republican presidential candidate's supporters called for his rival Hillary Clinton to be jailed.
Because she actually committed crimes.
By Wednesday evening, the chant had been reappropriated by an angry cadre protesting the election of Donald Trump. Led by the New York chapter of an organization called Socialist Alternative, the protesters would march 30 blocks north to Trump Tower, joining forces there with three other anti-Trump groups who began their own demonstrations further uptown, including the intersectional feminist hashtag GOP hands off me movement.
Wow. So, David, your memory is so much better than mine. Can you remember a anti-candidate reaction like this?
Not in a presidential election. No. Not at all.
And this is fairly unprecedented.
It is, you know, and the riots have become the thing of the day nowadays, but it's usually in, you know, police violence and different things like that. But when did that happen? Well, I think it happened in the last 8 years that became the way to demonstrate. So it's really difficult to blame Trump for the atmosphere that's being created when this has really been being built for the last 8 years.
Did you hear where Trump had, leased or whatever, dump trucks and completely surrounded Trump Tower to make sure that to keep, you know, people couldn't run vehicles and things into it. I thought we were an advanced society. I thought we cast a vote and then we respected the decision of the majority of the democracy.
Right.
We're supposed to be the leading nation on the planet, the most advanced, the one that shows everyone else how to do it the right way. We're not, you know, natives in Australia killing tribes and kidnapping women and children. This is America.
Yeah.
And the liberals were really telling Trump, you need to respect the outcome of this election.
Like, yeah, that's been the narrative, right?
They're just blowing him
off. Do you remember at the, what debate was it when he said...
third one, when he said he wouldn't concede?
Yeah.
When you respect the results of the election. And he said, you know...
Depends.
Yeah, if I win, you know, but, you know, I...
Do you remember the next morning as they?
Oh,
I mean, they just
apart.
Oh, it was just unbelievable.
He's threatening our democracy because he won't uphold the results.
The fabric
of
our democracy.
Yeah.
You know, will we even have a peaceful transition? Yeah. You know, there was fear that Hillary wouldn't be allowed to take office, that Trump...
Every time he says something about it being rigged, it's a threat to democracy.
What was interesting to me is today on the radio, I guess it was a British guy from the BBC News, had the Minister of Foreign Policy from Mexico on the line.
Yeah, I was listening to that same exact on PBS.
Yes, did you hear him try to get him to say anything bad about
Trump? Oh, man, he was working hard.
And he, I mean, the news broadcaster was like, well, you're just going to forgive him and that's what you're going to do? And essentially I said, well, yeah, that's what we have to do. We have to work together with him. I'm trying to run a country here, basically, is what he's saying. He's like, would it make any sense for me to, you know, we're neighbors.
Right.
Am I going to make a beef with
Let me cut off ties with the United States of America. Yeah,
essentially,
that would be
if you read between the lines, it's like, it'd be ridiculous for me.
Right. Yeah, we don't get any tourism from there, right? There's nobody that comes. They don't come down there and spend money in our nation, right?
And the guy came at him so many different angles trying to get him to, you know, do like this protest thing. And, you know, I was very impressed with the guy because he wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I agree. I listened to that as well. So on Tuesday night, we were at the Cove, and, you know, because they want you to retreat and relax, there's no televisions. There's no televisions anywhere.
Is there Wi-Fi?
There is Wi-Fi. Thank the Lord Jesus. And I only used it after the... I mean, I left my phone in my room. I left my all day long. I wanted just to connect with people. I was so disgusted with the way preachers wouldn't even have conversations. David, we're sitting next to each other. You know, this is my chance to meet you and talk about where are you pastoring, and they're just literally nose in the phone. I mean, that close. Anyway, 9 o'clock, we're done. Go back to the room. So I'm curious, what's going on here?
Yeah.
So I've got this Total Access app for CBS, and then I'm running Fox News off of the Chrome browser on my cell phone. So CBS is coming in crystal clear. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to watch the election results from CBS. It was clearer than Fox News for whatever reason. And I could not get over an entire table. There was probably 12 of them there.
I went back and forth between the same two apps. It was ridiculous.
I couldn't get over. I thought they were going to start crying.
Yep.
I mean, when states started, when Ohio fell to Trump.
Yeah.
Now
we need Hillary's path to victory.
Right.
Nobody had said that.
No.
In any of the, you know, it was always Trump. Trump's got a tough path to victory. And now after that goes,
right.
What's going to be Hillary's path to victory?
And then when Florida fell,
you
could see the countenance in the entire, I mean, their bias was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. And then the entire night, they could not get over. This was happening. I mean, shut the news network down. May we go home for the night.
Mm-hmm.
It was unbelievable. Mm-hmm. How did this happen?
Yeah,
that's what she did with her headquarters where they were at. Told them just to go home, sleep on it.
Yeah, well, she didn't show up, so there you go, right? Yeah.
All right, let's keep reading.
All right, so similar protests erupted across the country from Boston to L.A., with many others in predominantly blue cities like Atlanta, Austin, Chicago, Denver, Philadelphia, Portland, Oregon. Isn't that...
Portland, Oregon, yeah. Maybe we were going to be confused with Portland, Maine. I don't know.
All right, Portland, Oregon, Seattle, and Washington, D.C. Police estimated more than 5,000 people turned out in New York City alone, where their main target was Trump's unforeseen victory, but also the political establishment. United We Stand...
Wow.
F the system at hand.
If you've got sensibilities, don't read this article because Brian is editing it for us as he reads.
Went one resounding chant. The protesters were fiercely progressive, overwhelmingly youthful. The overwhelmingly youthful crew of Bernie Sanders supporter and Occupy Wall Streeters on steroids.
At least they understand what love and tolerance is, and they don't use coarse language like Trump does.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Trump won because of the weakness of the Democratic Party, a socialist alternative organizer told the crowd at Union Square, her voice amplified by a megaphone. I refuse to believe that this country is overrun with reactionaries. These are people who don't have what they need in order to thrive and survive.
So her perspective is that the economic instability that we're experiencing is what motivated this? She says, these are people who don't have what they need in order to... What does she mean by that, David?
I don't know. She calls them reactionaries. So, you know, they're not just the other side. These are radical,
right.
You know, These are crazy.
But she's people. A socialist.
Yes.
The entire heart of socialism is society's problems are predicated by the inequity of wealth. The lack of distribution. I mean, isn't that Marxism? If we could just distribute wealth evenly, we would all get along.
Yeah, and the two candidates, you know, Bernie's a socialist and Hillary's a Marxist. So, you know, that embodies that whole idea.
Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, and this is, you know, I bet if you dig into the background of many of these protesters, these are people who have not provided for themselves one thing through hard work.
No.
Because you don't say these kind of things if you understand how food gets to the table.
What it means to work. Yeah.
These are sons and daughters of upper class individuals.
University students.
Right, who have no idea what it is to work.
They've bought into the... Right. To the narrative.
Because work fixes your perspective on things like this.
Yeah, work does. Yeah, Mueller was talking about, where are the farmers that are atheists?
Exactly.
Right, you're not going to be an atheist and be a farmer. Yeah. And then he was talking about the single thing that changes liberals into conservatives is having children.
Yeah, you see that a lot.
Mm-hmm. Right, that is a giant, suddenly this hellion
even
of a toddler.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's even what?
Even to believers.
Right, even to believers,
I've seen so many people, or people who were off the reservation with their Christianity, grew up in a good home, wandered away. As soon as they have children, what do? They come back to church.
Yes, right.
We got to get right with God, you know.
Yeah, well, what's the old adage? If you're 20 and you're not a Democrat, you don't have a heart. And if you're 30 and you're not a Republican, you don't have a brain. That's what you figure out as time goes on and you get married and start having kids, is that philosophy stuff back there doesn't work. Yeah.
The crowd erupted into cheers, hoisted their defiant, sue the DNC. Sue the DNC.
Sue them.
I want damages.
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't do your job. If you'd have done your job, I wouldn't.
That's like that kid you got in a fight with in elementary school, and he was like, I'll sue you if you touch me. Like, instead of dealing with the problem. Strange.
My lawyer wasn't good enough, Judge.
Yeah.
Not my president posters. They're apocalyptic, see you in hell, Trump. American KKK anti-nightmare signs, the latter referencing Trump's white supremacist supporters. Did you guys hear, Bill told me this, I got to stop and visit with Bill on Tuesday, which is wonderful. What a church God has blessed him with. The facilities there were just incredible, guys. And a real testimony to the congregation. Because they've had five pastors, and none of the pastors have been anything worth any suicide, adultery, embezzlement. I mean, just pick the worst pastors, and that's what's been leading that church. And yet the grass is cut, the landscaping looks amazing, signage is just spot on, solid facilities. Anyway, we were discussing the Trump issue at breakfast, and Bill told me that John Piper posted something to Facebook about the Lord was angry and gave them a king.
Yeah, Hosea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. See, there's quite a perspective here. You know, then I was talking to another preacher this morning who said that he felt like God's people's prayers were answered and that we experienced a miracle.
Yeah, I've heard that too.
I mean, that's the polar opposites that we have. I mean, because we love John Piper.
Yeah.
I mean, we think John Piper is born again. I mean, we're pretty sure that he's going to heaven.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, we're crazy about John Piper. But from Piper's perspective, now think about what he said. I mean, I don't even know how I'm supposed to interpret that, because Bill said he didn't provide any commentary.
No, it was just the verse.
Just posted a verse. Mm-hmm. The Lord's angry and gave them a king. So obviously he's referring to God being angry and giving us Trump. Mm-hmm. So then if he gave us Clinton, what would we have concluded?
Yeah. Well, at the same time, Piper did, you know, and I think maybe Piper probably would have said the same thing if Hillary was elected too, because his whole point was, you know, I think his whole thing was, a Christian doesn't have to vote. He says, I'm going to vote. I'm just not voting for either one of these candidates. So I think he would have said, I think he said both of these are I think he could have tweeted no matter who won the.
And to me, what the most amazing
thing is.
But
David, you send a mixed message when you do
that. Yeah, I realize that.
Go ahead.
Well, I think the most amazing thing is that we do have this tension because. Yes, the scripture says that, but at the same time, Jesus Christ came out of that line, that kingly line, you know, in which God was angry. He didn't want him to go this way, but still, he made a way out of that line, out of the, and some of those kings weren't.
Unless it was the northern kingdom, but yeah. So, I mean, what is Piper communicating with that? I mean,
And then you, and at the same time, you've got MacArthur wholeheartedly supporting Trump and everything. And that
wholeheartedly
that Christians need to be voting for Trump because of the. So I mean, it's interesting what comes out of some of these pulpits.
All right, Brian, go ahead.
Many expressed fear of how President Trump, whose campaign rhetoric has consistently been called out as sexist, racist, and xenophobic by the media and his detractors, could endanger marginalized communities. Here's a quotation. As a trans...
You would say these words?
And I quote. As a trans woman, I'm really scared that I might not be able to have accessible health care to pay for my hormone therapy.
Did you hear that?
Oh, my goodness. What kind of world are we...
What kind of world when you've got a dude that stays there and says, I'm worried that I'm not going to have accessible health care to pay for my hormone therapy?
Said Brian Villalobos.
Yeah.
Brian.
You relating to him? Yeah.
Think
about a pink backpack.
Yeah.
He carried a black sign mocking Trump's campaign slogan with the words, America has never been great, written in pastel chalk.
Well, I would have to disagree with him because in the past, when dudes didn't come up and say this, I think that's pretty great.
Yeah.
Think about... What does that say? I mean, that is such an indictment on so many levels. I mean, it's so tiered. You could spend an entire podcast just unpacking how did we get to the point to where the biggest concern of a 24-year-old male is the accessibility to hormone therapy.
To become a woman.
And to have it paid for under the banner of health care. I mean, you know, I mean, we could come at it from a constitutional perspective and say, okay, you can pursue whatever lifestyle you want to pursue. If you want to take hormone therapy and become a woman, I can't stop you from doing that.
Right.
But to say, I'm worried about my health care and having that provided for me, you know, I mean, it's unbelievable. Where are we?
And just put yourself back in that farmer's field with the dad and the son, and just can imagine what that farmer, if his son ever said something like that, back in the day. I mean, you just can't, it's so ridiculously impossible to imagine that it's laughable. And it's so sad at the same time.
No, it's sad.
It makes you angry, sad, laughable. It's all of those things. But it just goes once again back to this person has never had to provide anything for themselves. They've never been, no one's ever said, no, you're not having that unless you do this. You want therapy? Then go earn a living and pay for it.
Yeah, it is such an indictment on pick him up and take him to North Korea. Pick him up and take him to China. Pick him up and take him to the Sudan. Pick him up and take him to anywhere in the Middle East, Iraq, Iran. You know, just go just about anywhere else in the world other than Europe.
Where they throw you off of buildings.
Right.
When you act like this guy's acting.
Or any of those situations where he would even remotely think that health care and hormone therapy is a viable option.
Yeah,
I would struggle to think that anyone inside the continent of Africa, outside of maybe South Africa, contemplates hormone therapy. Is that a thing?
Look at his next sentence.
Yeah.
I don't believe the country has ever been that great, at least not for people of color and women.
Which you are neither.
Yeah. Well, he might be a minority. Maybe. Well, he wants to be a woman, so he would identify that way, but. That's the narrative in the history books now.
Mm-hmm.
It's a narrative of oppression. You know, it wasn't we had founding fathers who came here to start a great nation. It was we had people that came here and oppressed other cultures, and the entire narrative is one of oppression. And so America's not great. And you don't talk about founding fathers. You don't talk about those guys because some of them owned slaves and some of them did this and some of them did that. And it's become this oppression narrative that is in every secular textbook you pick up.
And just think how anti-biblical that is.
Yeah.
Because what we're taught to be is no matter what situation the sovereign God of the universe places you in, you're supposed to A, praise and glorify Him, and B, be thankful.
Yeah.
So we're coming out of 8 years of the first black president of the United States, And we had every bit of the potential of the first woman president of the United States on this very election.
Yes.
And this is not a great nation for people of color and women. This is
yes.
not. It's
that any woman can be any profession she wants to in this country. She can be a brain surgeon. She can be a lawyer. She can be a Supreme Court justice. She can be a governor.
Right.
She can be an Army Ranger.
Right.
She might even be a dude.
Yeah, and we're going to talk about oppression in this country. I mean, it's ridiculous.
And the thing is, if this election had gone the other way, his statement would be totally the opposite.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
He would say, oh, America's the greatest now because we can do this.
Well, they loved the Electoral College last
day.
Week.
Yeah.
Well, the Electoral College was the greatest thing ever because it was that wall that was
yeah.
going to keep Hillary in office.
Yeah.
Well, now we need to get rid of the Electoral College. It's outdated. Interesting how that happens. A little relativism going on.
So continue, Brian.
All right, so... I am also a first-generation kid from Honduras, Villalobos added. So what does that mean for my family?
Well, nothing unless they're illegal.
All right. So near Madison Square Park, a young woman in camouflage jacket brandished her protest paraphernalia and a used mailer envelope with a Sharpie cry to end electoral voting. And explained that the electoral college was obsolete. To my understanding, we have electoral voting because our founding fathers didn't believe we were smart enough to vote on our own, said Gigi, who was 24, who declined to reveal her last name. That's good. I think that the majority of America is intelligent and educated enough to make our own decisions, and the majority of America voted for Hillary, she said, referring to Clinton's popular vote victory. Indeed, Clinton would have taken the election had she won the Electoral College, a system designed to ensure that candidates don't overlook small states for big cities, instead seeking support from a cross-section of the electorate. Winning the popular vote but losing the Electoral College, as Democrats have now done in two of the past five elections, has prompted calls for reform that would require a constitutional amendment. And everyone hates the system when their candidate loses, even if it's not their ideal candidate.
Well, I love the statement up there. To my understanding, we have electoral voting because our founding fathers didn't believe we were smart enough to vote on our own.
Who told you that?
That's a ridiculous statement. What? The idea was that everybody would get to vote and have their voices heard. It's actually the exact opposite of that statement.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So, up ahead, people carrying rainbow LGBTQ flags and orange socialist alternative ones snaked over to 6th Avenue, where traffic had stopped to accommodate the demonstration. City buses honked in unison with shouted slogans from the feminist End Rape Culture and the profane F Your Wall, while taxi and Uber drivers exchanged high fives and fist bumps with marchers.
New York City, ladies and gentlemen.
New Yorkers hate traffic, but on Wednesday evening they hated Donald Trump more. The rare, unsmiling drivers were called out by protesters on more than one occasion. Tax the rich, one yelled at a man sulking behind the wheel of his Range Rover. Others cursed and rushed towards a car whose driver had implored them to get a life.
I wish we would start taxing the rich in this country. I mean, it's obvious
yeah.
that the rich don't pay any taxes in the United States. That's clearly a fact, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. 10 blocks south of Trump Tower on 5th Avenue, organizers began panicking that much of the group had fallen behind. There were calls for the front to slow down, the back to keep up, and the onlookers, tourists, gawping or taking videos on their smartphones while others cheered to join the march. Hustling to keep up with the crush of people ahead, a 23-year-old woman in a long flannel shirt and winter hat that pulled over her ears struck up a conversation with me, introducing herself only as Kitty.
Of course. Listen to this one. How about this line?
All right, Trump and Pence should definitely be assassinated, Kitty offered, as if relaying that she'd eaten for lunch that day. If no one took them out, she'd anticipated, a huge effing Holocaust.
So she just threatened that the best course of action would be to assassinate the president-elect and the vice president. Could you imagine if anybody even suggested that about a Democratic candidate?
Around 8 p.m., Kitty pushed her way through throngs of people as foot traffic halted a block south of Trump Tower, where a chorus of F Your Wall chants echoed through the crowd, some of them aimed at a line of police officers cordoning off the streets from the sidewalk, effectively forming a barrier to Trump's gilded headquarters.
Out front, protesters waved a large rainbow flag and taunted the president-elect with a blow-up doll of his likeness dangling from a noose on a wooden pole. Did they really misspell pole?
They did.
that's a visual.
All right. Andrew Haining, a 19-year-old student at New York University, said he felt morally defeated that half of the country would elect someone who is such an awful candidate and human being. But tonight, this gives me hope.
A riot gives you hope. Great. Uh-huh.
Did you hear University of Kansas is providing therapy dogs for the students to cope with the depression?
Wow.
So you can go and pet a Labrador.
There's multiple universities are like, they don't have to take midterms because of the depressing results of the election.
See, I think we should hold the professors in the universities of America responsible, and we should sue them for their poor job of educating people that they interview on the street.
Be better than suing the DNC.
You know, the police come right up and say, "Where'd you go to college?" Okay, right. Send that guy a ticket in the mail.
Yeah, be awesome.
He gestured to the scene around us. Is that where we're at?
Yep. Mm-hmm. The hanging blow-up doll and gleeful protesters who had pulled the city into their orbit with many climbing construction sites and street signs to get a better view before breaking into an F. Donald Trump chant.
At least they're keeping it classy. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I like to see.
Educate.
Yeah.
Yep. He and dozens of others thrust their middle fingers in the air towards several tower residents, who looked down on the braying mob from their balconies.
The braying part is the best description so far.
I do like this. This article does have a lot of great descriptions.
Yeah,
really like the girl's hat covering her ears, like it really makes the article. The most important takeaway from all of this is that Trump duped his anti-establishment supporters into believing that he was just like them, said 18-year-old Tom Miratello, a fellow New York University student who had marched with Haining from Union Square. He stressed that he was not, however, blind to Hillary's troubling relationships with the truth and that he had read the emails WikiLeaks published. But as a gay man, Miratello said he feared that a Trump presidency would threaten LGBTQ rights and reverse what he estimated to be nearly 8 years of social progress.
Eighty
years of social progress. We're going back to the 40s, past Cold War fear-mongering, to where racial divide defines our nation, he told me.
So the homosexual movement has been building since the 40s. The 40s is when that started.
Right, and we all know that Trump is one of the most morally conservative candidates.
Yeah.
That you, I mean.
Well, remember, he held up a rainbow flag 2 weeks ago. I mean, he's not. Oh, man.
It's absurd. Yeah. I mean, the reason evangelicals held their nose and voted for him was because they know that the man is not.
Yeah, I'm sure he's going to start going up and rounding up gay people and putting them in camps. I mean,
you remember when we had that, it's been months now, but and we listened to Marco Rubio, I think it was, tell the person, no, you want to live in the kind of the United States that I would provide because I will not come after you, but your kind of, and they're proving him right.
Yeah,
absolutely.
They want to come after.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yep. So next to us, two young women hoisted a bloody pair of women's underwear.
Wow, this gets classier and classier as we go through this.
A nod to Trump's shuddering revulsion when it comes to women's reproductive functions. To Trump, women who menstruate are interchangeable with monsters.
Yeah, that's what he said.
More than a year ago, he suggested that Megyn Kelly had blood coming out of her eyes, blood coming out of her wherever. Protesters cheered again and again, each time a helicopter passed overhead, sometimes directly over Trump Tower, as if in solidarity with their pissed-off city. Several speculated aloud what the king in his castle thought of the scene. You know he loves this, said Cody Davis, a 24-year-old student at the New School, who wore a corduroy jacket and a hoop ring through his nasal cartilage. Thank you. So if we ever see him, he suggested to a fellow protester that they storm Trump Tower. That seems peaceful enough for today.
I bet she was in skinny jeans, too. Which is probably why they didn't charge the tower, because it's really hard to run in those.
It'd be hard to run away once they come out
exactly.
At you. By 9:15, people began spilling out onto 57th Street, though most stayed to disturb the peace for several more hours. If the map of blue millennial voters in the election and strong student turnout at New York's protest were any indication, America's youth will do everything they can in the next 4 years to prevent President Trump from being President Trump.
Yeah, I don't think that's going to work.
Again, they don't understand law. They don't understand the Constitution.
Well, and they don't understand work. They're not going to be, I don't know that they would be able to put in the work to make that happen.
Yeah, well, I speculate that most of them didn't even vote.
Yeah, exactly. And they're out here protesting.
Right. And they're just absolutely, absurdly ignorant.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just a product of the world we're living in. I mean, I'm seizing these moments of opportunities to work with my seniors in my Bible class, and they are just absolutely clueless, just clueless. The lack of ability to retain information from 1 year to the next is hurting us. And surely our students are indicative of students across the United States.
Sure.
I cannot think for a moment that we've assembled only the group of the stupid ones who can't remember stuff from 1 year to the next year. You know, so it's this constant, ongoing process of educating students in current events, why we have things, electoral college. How did we get to this point in which this happened? Because in all practical purposes, I don't think they'll have another election like this in their lifetime.
No, probably not.
Well, you know, the thing is, part of the issue is we educate for the sake of education. I mean, that's the problem. That's where we've got to in America. We don't educate because you need this education to work or do something.
Mm.
And so, you know, talk about retaining information. You know, I retain the information I need to work.
Yeah.
You know, when I'm on my computer and I haven't used the particular software in a while, I have to, like, reacquaint myself with the software. But the software I use every day,
you're a proficient with
second
it.
Nature.
Right, right.
And the part of the problem is students aren't expected to do anything these days. You know, all you're supposed to do is learn. Well, why?
Right.
Well, so it's done in a vacuum. And once again, to go back to the past, there was farming. There was apprenticeships that was going on, and education was a part of that. But there was like manual things that young people were expected to do, even if they weren't necessarily just farmers. They had to keep a farm going because most people lived in an agrarian society where, you know, you went home and you did some chores.
Well,
they don't have to do anything.
Right. The other thing, John, is I used to not carry around a device with me 24 hours a day that gives me access to all information.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's insanity.
I mean, remember when you used to sit down and you watch a TV show and you go, what was that guy in? And then, you know, you'd sit there and agonize it over for the next hour, and then someone would go, oh, yeah, he was in that. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's right. Well, now,
just Google it. Yep.
He was in that, and that, and that, and that, and that. Oh, okay.
Or you just ask David Manis.
Yeah, it's there's no need to retain information.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to retain information.
Yeah, and that's the, you know, the narrative that's been driven, again, from the liberal side of things, and you're seeing the result right here, is that the answer to your problems is education. That's why the whole free college. That's why we need everybody should have an opportunity to go to college, because the narrative is education solves poverty, education solves all these social problems because we learn more about each other and all that. But what education is it? Well, it's clearly just the liberal arts education model.
Mm-hmm.
It's not vocational stuff. It's not teaching you how to do anything necessarily.
Work-related.
You know, it's not that. You know,
that would be deplorable.
And so what do you have? You have a lot of kids with women's studies degrees and philosophy degrees and sociology degrees and things like that, and they go, look, I've got a degree from NYU. Yeah, but you can't do anything with that except this. Go out and complain about things that you have no idea about because you've been
and
in the
use your creative vocabulary, right? I mean, because
yeah.
And there's no other word that would be better than F, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's the single word that I'm going to use over and over
again.
Well,
the cool teachers probably told them that in class. You know, the secular teachers, the ones that curse, are really cool. So that probably helps the whole thing. But, you know, instead of teaching somebody how to do something, we teach them how to we spoon feed them and tell them how they're supposed to think. And what do you get? You get this right here, and that's the faulty narrative. Well, if you just learned, we wouldn't have minimum wage jobs anymore. No, because why not take that minimum wage worker and teach him how to be an electrician, teach him how to be a plumber, teach him how to be whatever, and all of a sudden he's got a livelihood. He can live his life, and you know what that does? That solves poverty. Now he can marry somebody. Now he can raise a family. You know, and that philosophy degree does that kid nothing. You know, it doesn't do anything for him.
So now let's, John.
Well, and I was just going to say the most ironic thing is they're really taught that to only think one thing, and that they're taught that there shouldn't be any disagreements.
Yeah.
That you know, if you run into somebody who disagrees with you, the best course of action is just to call them a name.
Yeah, you've been victimized now, so
right.
Yeah.
Or say they're to blame, and instead of saying, you know what, there are people out here who disagree with this opinion that we hold, and you know that is the model, like you said, Dave. That's the liberal arts college model, mm-hmm. is to teach that if anybody disagrees with this, they're on the wrong side of history.
Yeah, shout them down.
Yep.
So now let's just kind of shift gears a little bit. So now we're pastors, and we're thinking about this a little bit more. These young people are reflective of maybe not the majority, but close to the majority of college students across the United States. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair assessment?
I think so. Yeah.
All right. So having said that, so these students that are sharing this sentiment with these ideals, who are fed up that they're protesting, they might be, you know, they might be 1 degree or 2 degrees more radical than the typical student, but there's not a whole lot separating them from the typical students.
Yeah, well, you saw that they had protests in, you know, New York, Austin, Atlanta, Seattle. It pretty much goes across the whole country.
Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, even our best core of college students could arguably be from Liberty and see what they did about the president announcing his support to Trump. I mean, they had protests and a lot of people were upset over there, throwing a fit.
All right, so now this is what we do as a church. So we take that little boy or that little girl, and John, we prayed for them when they were born. You know, we visited them in the hospital, and then Mom and Dad brought them in front of the church, and we prayed for them, and we dedicated ourselves to raising them in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. And then, David, we brought them up in Awana or RAs or Royal Rangers. And then, of course, we had a good Sunday school program, and we had a children's pastor that taught them the Word of God in Power Hour. And then we transitioned them to youth group. And, man, we even put them in a Christian school. So we put, you know, 18 years of blood, sweat, equity, and then we send them to a university like that, David. Mm-hmm. Now, just think what I'm saying, John. This is go live your Christian faith out there. Go be a Christian at NYU. Go there and be a convictional Christian there. I mean, hold to gender distinctions there. Hold to the depravity of man there. Hold to the necessity of work there. Hold to the Creator made all things there. Hold to the sovereignty of God there. Hold to obey the magistrates there. Think about, I mean, has there been a more difficult world, maybe first century Rome?
Yeah, certain situations like that.
Right. To live out your Christian worldview.
Yeah, well, and there certainly hasn't been one in Western society
until now.
Yeah,
I think it's even tougher because I think I told you this the other night on Sunday night. Even back then, you didn't have to argue with somebody whether there was a God. You know, you might have to argue, well, there's not, you know, a whole bunch of gods. There's only one God, but they at least looked around and had the wherewithal to say, hey, you know, something must have been responsible for this place I'm living in. You know, but now we even have to have that discussion. The fundamental discussion. The ground floor.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's certainly a place in universities for Christians, but man, you better be real careful about that, because I would say, what are we going to talk, 1 in 30? I don't know. I don't know what the number is. You know, my wife went in a Christian and maintained her testimony all
throughout
college.
Yeah, right, David. But how many years ago was that?
Yeah, that was 2000.
Okay, so that's 16 years ago.
It's a different world now, and the temptations are different, and I find it hard to believe that you can go through 4 years or however many years of that and come out unscarred. You may still have a faith, but you're going to be carrying baggage with you that you didn't go in there with, because you've just had these liberal ideologies poured on top of you the whole time. And what do you do when you're in these classes? Well, I got to get A's, so I'm not going to go against what the professor's telling me. I'm going to spout back what he wants to hear, even if I don't believe it. But that means that stuff's working through your mind and working through your system. You can't get out of that without wounds. You know, I think that's the real danger.
I mean, recognizing the fact that irrespective of what we say and the warnings we echo from the pulpit in unison concerning these secular universities and the hotbed of progressive liberalism that they've all become, our people don't seem to be heeding the warnings.
No.
I mean, they simply don't. So I'm looking at Brian and I'm looking at you, Nate, and saying, my soul, your mission is harder today than it's ever been in the history of the modern evangelical church to prepare Christian young people to remain convictional Christians during 4 years of education in this world of progressivism. I mean, it's not enough to teach them David and Goliath. That won't equip them for the hell that they're going to enter into. They have to be so well versed in what we believe to be true, why we hold it such a way, what are the opposing arguments. You have to equip them for the ring. Rocky Balboa kind of a conflict. When was it like this before? I mean, you mentioned your wife, brilliant, educated, godly family. But if we compare 2000, David, to 2016...
It's a different world.
I mean, yes, it's only been 16 years, but the glide path on that 16 years, that wasn't a 45-degree angle. That is nearly a vertical drop.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I mean, this guy's major concern in life is that the health care that he is now classifying as hormone therapy might not be available to him.
Yeah.
I mean,
For free.
How did we get there? How in the world did we get there in such short order?
And the thing, the other girl made the statement, I can't believe there's so many reactionaries. Well, look, the fact of the matter is, that guy's got health care because I have a burden now that I didn't have 3 years ago.
That's correct.
And so, but what am I... They misunderstand human nature. I'm just supposed to be okay with that? Oh, yeah, yeah. Take your hormone therapy. Yeah, I'll pay for it. Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yep.
You know.
And that's, and really, in my opinion, that's the reaction that prompted whites in particular to vote.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't tell anyone they were voting for Trump. They didn't have stickers out. They didn't tell a pollster. They just went and cast a vote.
And they did that because they saw or believed and thought they saw in a man somebody who would say he's going to do what he says he's going to do.
Yeah.
Because he was unashamed to say whatever he was thinking. And didn't backpedal for a minute because of political correctness.
Yeah, or the anti side of that is they trusted a man 8 years ago who said he was going to bring hope and change, and they've seen none of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, so right. Let's remember, David, that 8 years ago he told us that he respected the sanctity of marriage.
Yeah, and he was gonna be the unifying force, that he was gonna bring all the groups together. And what did he do? He's done the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. So you want
we have
anybody,
never been more polarized, right, as a nation
than
we are
anybody
now.
For the division, it's not Trump. Like I said, Joey and I did a podcast months and months ago. Trump's Frankenstein. You know, he's the monster that's come out of this, but he didn't create himself. You know, it's the circumstances that created a situation where Frankenstein's monster can roll out of the swamp and take this over. And that's what's happened.
Then you drain it.
Yeah, that's what he's trying to do, right? I mean, you know, we didn't have this racial divide 8 years ago. It's just, and I'm not saying there wasn't any racism 8 years ago, and there aren't legitimate issues in this country, but this did not exist 8 years ago. Who do you blame?
Yeah. Are you guys familiar with what happened in the state of Missouri? A Navy SEAL got elected to be a former Navy SEAL got elected to be governor of the state. Never ran for office, never served in any position, not city council, not state, nothing, David. He went from being a civilian to the governor of Missouri. 3 weeks ago, according to the polls, he was 10 points behind with no hopes of winning in just 3 weeks. Now, are you familiar? Are you? Yeah, you know who I'm talking about, right? He's not a governor. The governor-elect of the states. Once again, the people said, "We're tired of the career politicians. We want somebody that is like us. That they're okay with Trump being a billionaire."
Yeah, because the fact of the matter is, poor people can't run for president. You know, you can't. Anybody can be president. No, you have to have a lot of money to run for president,
and you have to be 35.
But he had to
be successful at something.
Yeah, and he did it largely with his own money, you know, at least getting off the ground. And so I think people can look at that and say,
well, they respect it.
He's not beholden to the machine. Yeah.
What are your thoughts? What are your comments? Did you hear what I said about the necessity of raising convictional Christians who are able to go on these college campuses? If there was ever a time where we need Christian universities, places where I can learn professions and not have my values just utterly destroyed, that's the world we're living in. And David, are we going to get the universities back?
I don't think so. I think that is long gone. Yeah.
Right. We're not getting the cities back.
It'll be worse. If it goes down the glide path that we've talked about, when the edicts come down that you have to support same-sex marriage and you have to support gender identity, and these private Christian schools say, well, we're not going to do that, and federal government says, well, then you'll get no more FAFSA funds, and students will not be able to attend those schools because they're too expensive, and they'll be gone in a year.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the liberties may survive, but your small colleges won't.
Yeah, what the future looks like in America may not be that bright.
Yeah.
It may very well be bleak. What happens when they say to Christians, only by going to that university can you become a lawyer. Only by going to that university can you become a doctor. Only by going to those schools can you receive the certifications necessary to do X, Y, or Z.
And if you want to be licensed, you're going to have to do this, and this. Yeah.
What's going to happen, David, when they say, in order to be a licensed doctor, you must perform abortions? Mm-hmm. How will you be a Christian and abort babies?
Yeah, and on the same lines, if you want to be, you know, a minister, then you're going to have to officiate gay weddings.
Right. Right. What's going to happen to evangelical Christians? I would suggest to you that if you're a evangelical convictional Christian, you should thank God for the Electoral College.
Yeah.
Because the Electoral College is the only way your vote still matters.
Yeah.
If we strictly go to a popular vote scenario,
you'll be totally ignored.
That's correct.
You won't even be considered.
You will be utterly marginalized. The only way you matter is because the path to 270 takes me through your state.
Yeah.
I've got to get Ohio. I've got to get Pennsylvania. We saw that. I think anyone that was paying attention to this got a lesson in the importance of the Electoral College and how your vote does make a difference in certain states. Mm-hmm. In this system, I don't know where we've gotten a clearer picture of it. When Ohio fell, when Florida fell, when Pennsylvania was teetering, you remember when Pennsylvania was going blue, red, blue, yeah, red? Virginia was going blue, red, blue, red?
North Carolina, Florida.
Right, North Carolina. And you were watching that going, your vote matters. Mm-hmm. Governor McCrory may not retain the spot. 5,000 voters.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. David, if we have 100 counties in North Carolina, just for the sake of quick math, We're dealing with, John, 50 bodies in a county. Folks, that's a church. That's a single church saying, we're going to vote. We will not sit at home. We're going to vote. We're going to cast votes. Think about the number of people in our congregation. Would to God that we could actually get an accurate assessment, because they'd be embarrassed now if they didn't. Did you vote? Did you vote? How many Christians didn't vote? At the local level, your vote makes a difference. And we saw that in 13 states. At the state level, Michigan is incredibly tight, mm-hmm. John. They haven't even called it yet. It's so tight.
0.2% difference or something.
Like right. That's remarkable. That means that in the state of Michigan, going to the ballot and casting a vote makes a difference.
Yeah, how about there were, in the United States, there were 231,556,622 eligible voters, and 46.9% did not vote. So 47% of the country did not vote on Tuesday.
Right, and how many of those are evangelical Christians? Yeah, it's a stewardship. Your vote is a stewardship. God has given you an opportunity to steward something, and we are accountable for being faithful stewards. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.